Let's see what the stew has in store for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, a Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. This episode is brought to you by our awesome Patreon backers like the bodacious Burton Miller, the great GM Gerrymander, and the daring Daniel Markwick. Today our episode is going to be a little different as we gnomes share some thoughts on the role D&D has played in our lives while being involved in this hobby. This year, 2024, marks the 50th anniversary of the first publication of D&D. The actual date of the anniversary is a little fuzzy. On February 7th, 1974, Gary Gygax sent Dave Arneson a postcard letting him know printing was almost complete and that his copy would be in the mail soon. Actually, it wasn't a postcard, it was an index card with a stamp on it because that's how Gygax rolled. The anniversary date that has been celebrated is often a bit nebulous. Some longtime fans have celebrated in January, but we know that likely printed copies didn't make their way into stores and people's hands until mid to late February. Regardless, 50 years of D&D is quite a monumental anniversary to mark and worth a few words from your resident gnomes.
So, hi, I'm Matt Negley. I'm one of the OG gnomes, dating the whole way back to the hoary yesteryear of 2008, which is a story of its own for another day. My articles are all over the place, but if there's a strong theme, it's probability and dice. This meshes pretty well with my day job, where I'm a statistician, although, to be fair, not a particularly impressive one. I have two stories for you today. First, I'd like to tell you about how I got introduced to D&D and RPGs in general. I was in sixth grade, and one of my friends was telling me about a game he and his brothers played. In this game, they flew around space on the back of a dragon named Leviathan, and they were fighting pirate ships. And these pirate ships would try to shoot them down with ballista and catapults, and Leviathan would swallow these projectiles, compress them in the fires of his belly, and vomit them forth as explosive missiles. So, of course, I had to try out this game, right? So I picked up the basic D&D Red Box, and I would later buy the Spelljammer box set, which Spelljammer, to this day, still my favorite D&D setting. And I would be a little disappointed to discover that 90% of what I had been sold was nowhere in any of the D&D books. But by the time I figured this out, it didn't really matter. I was hooked. So the next story I have for you is from 7 years later when I was a freshman in college. I had settled into a group of friends, and my dorm room had become the de facto hangout spot because it was centrally located and on the ground floor. Unbeknownst to me, there was this girl in our group that thought I was a little creepy. Now, there's two reasons for this. First, I will cop to it. I was incredibly socially awkward, and yes, there may have been some legitimate reasons for her to think that. But the second reason was that her family had fallen hard for the misinformation campaign surrounding the Satanic Panic, and I was creepy specifically because I played D&D and thus must have been a card-carrying Satanist. You can't make this up, folks. Anyway, one day she's hanging out with everyone else in my room and she picks up the Monster Manual. Well, she's a big fantasy genre reader and she's more open-minded than her family, and so she's looking at the illustrations and she brings it over to me, shows me one of the pictures, and she says, "Can I be one of these in the game?" I think it was a Swan May or a Lil End or something like that. Anyway, I'm a hardcore rules as written guy at the time, and so I say, "No." So she comes back a couple minutes later. "How about one of these?" "No." "Well, what about one of these?" "No." Eventually she says, "Well, what can I be in this game?" And I say, "Almost anything in any other book on that shelf." So, despite me being, you know, perhaps the world's worst ambassador for D&D, she eventually rolls up an Elven Feralan, which is a 2E Ranger subclass with this Tarzan feel slash backstory that trades down on equipment options in exchange for extra animal companions. And then she proceeds to spend the entire campaign befriending every damn animal the party meets. And that, good listener, is how I met my wife. So that's my formative D&D story for you.
Hi all, this is Senda from Pandas Talking Games, and in the past, she's a super geek. Like many of us, D&D was absolutely my onboard into tabletop RPGs, and I played D&D exclusively for many, many years. As a fantasy-obsessed teen and college student, it absolutely took me from the realm of reading and consuming fantasy as a genre into the realm of playing, creating, and experiencing fantasy as a genre that we were making happen at the table. It was how my friend group in college got together every weekend and just hung out for like 12 hours, or sometimes until the sun came up, or sometimes until our DM couldn't keep his eyes open anymore. So as an homage to D&D's 50th anniversary, I just want to tell you quickly one of my favorite D&D stories ever. And if you've listened to any of my podcasts, you may have heard this before, so my apologies. But it is one of my absolute all-time favorites. And it's the story of how, as a group, an 8-year-old child defeated a Lich King with Mage Hand. Now, as you can imagine, this story is difficult to tell outside of D&D circles because you have to kind of know a bunch of things like how big and evil a Lich King would be and how puny of a spell Mage Hand is in 3rd edition. But I think what this story is really about is how D&D and TTRPGs in general give you the opportunity to resolve problems in ways that a video game could never, right? So, here's my story. We're in a dungeon. There's a Lich King that we need to defeat. We are on maybe session 2 of a campaign that we all expect to run for, gosh, years. Now, this dungeon is pretty standard in terms of we're going from room to room. We got a 5-foot hallway, we got a 10-foot square room, etc., right? It's your average dungeon. But the specific puzzle in this dungeon and what we came in to find was a crown, a very, very powerful crown that we need to get in order to get powerful enough to defeat the Lich King. We're all like level 2 at this point. So just running off and fighting this guy is not even feasible. So we not only need to level up a bunch and go through a bunch of adventures to get there, we also need this really powerful magical device. So we're in the dungeon looking for the crown. We get into a room and there's the crown. Like, wow, that was astonishingly easy. Sort of strange. Seems a little odd. We get up to the crown and there's a little plaque that says next to it something along the lines of, "One of the crowns is real, but if you choose wrong, traveler, then everything will explode." Obviously, I'm paraphrasing significantly, and it sounded way cooler on the plaque in the wall. So we're like, huh, okay, grab this crown, but maybe we won't leave the dungeon till we know we have the right one. And then we go another couple of rooms, and there's another crown. And then we go another couple of rooms, and there's another crown. I think we ended up finding 5 or 6 crowns, right? They're all identical as far as we can tell without some, you know, actual work to try and figure it out. And they're all magical because they're magical in, you know, potentially different ways. The ones that aren't the real one are obviously going to explode when we leave this dungeon. Now, the DM who was running this was pretty mechanically oriented, so he definitely had things like how much damage one of these crowns would do if we left with the wrong one. And it was when it was removed from the premises of the dungeon that it would basically have a nuclear level explosion. So we figure out which crown is the right crown. Now, none of us are super duper confident, but like sometimes you just have to go for it. So we're like, okay, we think we have the right one. We've done everything we can possibly think of to validate that and verify it. And we're going to go back out of the dungeons. We get to the entrance of the dungeon. We walk out to get back to our mighty steeds that we left tied up to a couple of bushes out front. And there's the Lich with our horses. And he's like, "Hey, give me the crown." And we're like, "Oh God, no." So we dive back into the dungeon. And he just stands there looking really creepy and powerful and is basically like, well, then you're never going to leave the dungeon, because if you don't give me the crown, I'm not leaving. You all die anyway. So we spend a couple of minutes going, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? And then our mage, who was skinned as an 8-year-old child, remember, we're like level 2 or something, right? Who had just been learning magic. So she's got a bunch of first level spells and cantrips and stuff. She's like, wait, somebody go get one of those fake crowns and bring it out here. We're not going to leave the dungeon, but, and I think you can probably see where this is going, maybe we can use it. So we're like, okay, we go get one of the crowns. We bring it back to the front of the dungeon. I, the fighter, launch this crown as hard as I can at the lich. And then the 8-year-old magical child girl uses mage hand to aim it at him directly and like land it on him. We do this and then we run inside the dungeon as fast as we can and basically duck for cover. And outside, there is a giant explosion. And when we stick our heads back out, we definitely murdered our horses. The lich was gone. Definitely, we actually murdered the lich with that explosion. And then also, there was a very large crater and might have taken out maybe the village too. Anyway, the moral of the story is, one of the best things about D&D and TTRPGs in general, in my opinion, is being able to use those really creative decisions, the tools that you have, and make a plan and implement it. One of the sad things about playing games is that if you set something up for your players that ends up being really powerful and they surprise you, then sometimes there's no more campaign to be had because you already solved the problem. Even if there was a giant crater in the side of a mountain because of how you solved that problem. So that is the story of how an 8-year-old mage girl defeated a lich with mage hand. And yeah, happy 50th, D&D.
Hello, I'm Walt Chinowski, a.k.a. the Crusty Old Gnome, and in honor of Dungeons & Dragons' 50th anniversary, I thought I'd share my story of how I got involved in the craziness we call role-playing games. Back in the very early 1980s, 81-ish or so, a 9-year-old me saw a commercial on television for the Dungeons & Dragons electronic game. I was immediately hooked by what I saw. It had an electronic maze that was generated as you played to try to get a treasure and get out of there before a dragon got you. So later, when my parents took me to a discount department store and I saw Dungeons & Dragons on the shelf, I begged them to get it for me, thinking it was the electronics game. As you might have surmised by now, it wasn't. It was the magenta box of the Dungeons & Dragons basic set written by Tom Moldvay. That first night, I was very confused opening it up and finding two books inside, one of them 64 pages, another, I think it was a 32-page adventure with some funny dice that I had to color in myself. It was really beyond 9-year-old me and my brother, who was about a year and a half younger. I vividly remember my dad walking in and out asking me if I'd figured out the rules yet. Back then, board games had rules that were either printed on the back of the box or they were a page or two, certainly not 64. I struggled to try to figure the game out, but I really didn't understand it until a couple months later. I went on an altar boy retreat and I saw a couple of kids playing the game for the first time. After that, I discovered how to play, created some house rules where I was unclear, and eventually started bumping into other people who had either played the game or at least had heard about it. And that started my lifelong love of role-playing. I would have to say that the biggest impact or legacy that role-playing has had on me is that I wouldn't have the circle of friends that I have if it weren't for role-playing. I've met people from all walks of life who otherwise, you know, wouldn't have crossed paths with me if not for role-playing, and not the least of which being my, you know, beloved wife, who I met at a live-action role-playing event in the late 90s. So in a very weird way, I have role-playing to thank for blessing my life with my wife and my children. Also, in the early 2000s. I got into the industry and I was able to write for several different companies on role-playing games, and particularly this being the 50th anniversary for Dungeons & Dragons, I was able to write a portion of Out of the Abyss, which was one of the first adventure paths for 5th edition. So that's my story. Here's to 50 years of Dungeons & Dragons, and may there be many more.
Tell me a story, Story. See, it's funny because that's my name, Josh Story, and kids on the playground, they're not all that original. So I've been hearing that phrase for as long as I can remember. But it wasn't until I discovered Dungeons & Dragons that I actually wanted to start telling my own stories. Now, of course, like, as any imaginative kid, I came up with characters and I came up with fun scenarios and came up with little scenes and games in my head, and I would doodle them all out in notebooks and on homework. But it wasn't until my mother bought me my first D&D book that I started seeing behind the scenes. I started figuring out how storytellers piece things together. And sure, this was for a game. This wasn't like a writing manual, obviously. But it was still kind of the same thing, you know? It married that imaginative freedom of playing with a system and a formula. Not like an RPG system, though of course that's in there. But like a way of thinking about what is engaging, about what will get people to care about what's behind the next door or on the next page. And while we might have learned about it in grade school, my college writing courses that I took, they didn't really care too much about Friedrich's Pyramid or three-act structure, but the Dungeon Master Guide did. And it's thanks to Dungeons & Dragons and learning how to piece those things together that I turned storytelling into my life, both professional and personal. But it's not just the mechanics, the nuts and bolts of storytelling that D&D introduced me to. It opened up my eyes to what fantasy could be. I can remember walking into my friendly local comic book shop, and it had a little section in the back devoted to Dungeons & Dragons and a few other role-playing games. And I saw the Planescape manual, the box set, really, sitting on a shelf. And I was like, what the hell is that? And I saved up and I bought that and I took it home and I tore into it. I opened up that box and I lost myself in the world of sigil or however it's pronounced. And that taught me just how weird fantasy can be and how fantasy can be whatever you need it to be. D&D allowed me to explore stories and themes and characters that I wouldn't have been comfortable even thinking about. It helped me discover things about myself, about who I am, about who I want to be. Like, I had a character who had some training in medicine, right? Essentially, they knew CPR. I realized I, myself, didn't know CPR, and I thought that was not great. So it's because of a stinking role-playing character that I learned how to potentially save someone's life. Hopefully, I'm never put in that situation, but if I am, I know what to do. So D&D, like a door in Sigil, opened up so many worlds to me. And it's because of D&D and because of the stories that I wanted to tell through there, through that medium, that I met some of the best friends of my life, friends that are still with me to this day. It introduced me to my husband, and I cannot imagine what directions my life would have taken if it weren't for a stinking rules manual talking about what to do with some funky-looking dice. And in the end, it's all about the story that you get to tell.
Hey everyone out there in Gnome Stew land, this is JT Evans, and I've been part of the Gnome Stew crew for almost 8 years now. Wow, how time flies. This particular bit, though, is to talk about D&D's 50th anniversary that is happening on, well, some debated date of 2024. While I don't know the exact publication or first sale date of the first copy of D&D, I can tell you that the first day I played D&D was July 9th, 1983, using the Mincer Red Box set. That's a whole nother story that I'm not going to get into, though. But this means that I've been in this amazing hobby for 40 years now. Honestly, it doesn't feel like 40 years. Well, except for my knees. My knees definitely know that I'm 50 years old. However, in those 40 years, I've seen oodles of changes in D&D, RPGs in general, RPG culture, and gaming society. Many of those changes have been for the better, and I applaud those changes. While I've played every edition of D&D that has hit the shelves from 1983 through to modern day, I still think my favorite is 2nd edition AD&D. That's where I truly cut my teeth as a gamer that played character roles instead of just a player who rolled dice. This partially came from me maturing as a human being to get to that point. It also partially came from the gaming group that I was involved with during the late 80s and early 90s. I certainly know that it came from the GM of the game that I was in when I was 16. He pulled me aside and very nicely asked me to stop playing D&D like it was a video game with the reset button to start over with a new character. He was right. That instructional and enlightening conversation put me on the road to finding roles to play instead of dice to roll. I am still deeply indebted to Joe for that conversation back when I was still wet behind the ears. It encouraged me to mature into a great GM for D&D and most other RPGs. And it got me to the point where I knew enough about what I was doing to be invited to him some 8 years ago to join Gnome Stew. In more modern days of my RPG life, I've slipped away from the current iteration of D&D. No, I'm not saying it's a bad game. It's actually a great game with some nuances and excellent developments put into it. However, it doesn't support my playstyle or my group's playstyle. We have instead moved back to playing 1st edition AD&D to get our quote-unquote D&D fix. And we use many other different games for other genres like sci-fi, cyberpunk, space opera, urban fantasy, and so on. Will I put the 2024 version onto my overflowing shelves and bring it to the table? No, I don't think I will, because the iterative changes I've read and heard about are not large enough to alleviate the issues I have with the current system and its style of play. However, I do wish it all the success in the world. I'd hate to see the game that started me off in this hobby to fade into the pages of history. I hope that everyone who is in this great hobby finds joy, adventure, success, lots of critical hits, very few fumbles, and wonderful companionship while they sit at the virtual or physical tabletops.
Oh man, formative D&D stories? Whew, how much time have we got? Hi, I am John Arcadian. I am one of the gnomes over at Gnome Stew. I write D&D books now. I create D&D podcasts. I do art direction. It's been a hobby profession thing that I've been doing for, you know, far, far too many years, stretching into multiple decades at this point. I first discovered D&D and role-playing games when I was a young kid in the 80s, and, you know, would go into a used bookstore or the bookstore in the mall that no longer exists and see all these books on the shelf right next to the novels that I would read, and I would go paw through them and realize, like, wait a minute, this is a game of some sort. But of course, it was the 80s, and there was a lot of stuff out there with the whole satanic panic, so I was not allowed to actually play these games, and there wasn't anybody around to play them with. So all I could do was sort of read the books when I went into, you know, these bookstores. And thank goodness for my mom, who was a very calm and reasoned influence in my young life. She understood that, you know, this was not this thing that it was made out to be, but it still was a little touchy for my parents. So she ended up getting me some of these books when we stopped into a gaming store in Kent, Ohio, on the way to SeaWorld that I don't think exists anymore, the gaming store called Spellbinders. And they had the Monster Manual, and I was just like, oh, I really want this, it's really cool. And so she got me this Monster Manual for AD&D. And so I sat there in the car just pawing through it at maybe like 6-7 years old, just looking at like all of these monsters and write-ups and, you know, coming like fresh off of reading The Hobbit and being like, ooh, what's all this thing? What's all this? How does this work? You know, I don't believe I understood all the words. I was a really early reader, but, you know, I was just going through this book and I fell in love with it. And so it sat on my bookshelf. And then eventually, from one used bookstore to another, when I had enough money to just sort of buy the book and take it with me. And my parents, I'm sure, knew I had these D&D books, and they were okay with it so long as I didn't play. It was a very odd, definite, you know, thing. But yeah, so I had these books and read them all throughout, you know, my teen years. I didn't actually get to play with other people like that until college. I actually built my own role-playing game and played with some friends first, you know, just this little MechWarrior-inspired thing, because I also got the MechWarrior Battletech manuals and those, you know, other, I don't think I ever got any Vampire or anything else, but I had a couple of other role-playing game books, but of course the D&D was what I had. But yeah, then in college, somebody I knew was going to run a game. We're on the verge of like the 3.5. I think we're into it, but he knew second edition. So I had a bunch of the second edition books that I collected over the years. So I made my first character, you know, as a basic fighter named Sun, you know, and your name is Sun?
Yeah, my name is Sun.
How did you get that name?
Well, my father always called me.
And that was my first fighter that I played with that sort of like low int, you know, stereotypical jokes going on. But had a blast with that character. You know, a couple of bad moments from the GM who, you know, didn't really do things in sort of a good way. But so that actually spurred me on to go, I'm going to go run my own game now. And then I started running for, you know, that group of friends when our first game fizzled out. And then I ran for another group of friends and another group and another group. And I was just super hooked at that point. You know, it had always sort of been in my blood, been in those early years reading through and thinking through and designing systems and, you know, writing stuff in journals and imagining things. And, you know, after that, I was just like, well, I'm going to start making some games. I'm going to make a game that sort of, you know, homebrew fixes a couple of the things I want to be different here. I'm going to make a game that sort of changes the paradigm here. And then I started discovering a lot of the other games that were out there that just never made it quite to the, you know, used bookstores or the comic and gaming stores that were around me. And then it just snowballed from there. But yeah, like, it was such a magical thing to have those D&D books that just felt like they came from this, you know, arcane hidden place in the back of used bookstores growing up. You know, especially as a kid growing up, you know, reading The Hobbit and watching, you know, the animated specials and getting this, like, you know, very late 70s-esque vibe of what these things were, and then finding these books, and it was like, there's this whole other world out there I just don't know about. And being a fairly, you know, quiet, reserved kid, you know, didn't play with a lot of the neighborhood kids, you know, it was like, wait, you play this game with other people, that in and of itself was magical. Like, here's a way to connect with people and talk to people and engage with people. You know, that for a very shy, nerdy kid was hard to find. You know, I was never into sports, never enjoyed those things, never appreciated getting pushed into them. But, like, this thing, I could, like, talk with other kids and chat with them. And all the opportunities, unfortunately, when I was younger, just never came to be. Like at one sort of like, I think Cub Scouts or Boy Scouts, there was a like kid who was playing a game like that, and they talked about inviting me into it, and then that just never manifested the way, you know, things don't manifest when you're a kid because you don't have control over your schedule. But yeah, like I would have loved to have had more chances to play at this when I was younger. But you know, it was still great to have and read the books and just getting immersed in these worlds and then move on to the novels. And then when the chance and opportunity finally hit, you know, like all the tinder was there, the fire was ready, the bonfire was just ready to go for the world of D&D and all the role playing out and beyond that. And the moment I could get that first spark, whoosh, that was it. And it's just been, you know, that flame has been burning ever since.
Hello, my name is Tomás Jiménez Rioja. Handle T Jiménez with a G at the start of it, RGM on all social media. And I am one of the writers for the Gnome Stew that is celebrating the 50-year anniversary of D&D. It's incredible that this game has lasted for so long and has revolutionized the whole industry, be it not only on the TTRPG space, but also on the movie space, on the video game space, and in so many other places. Now, my personal story with D&D starts about 6 or 7, I think, years back. I am one of those new kids in the block, let's say, that got started with D&D from watching Stranger Things. Well, yeah, I did start before that with a GM that wasn't that great at it and made me not want to try it again. But once Stranger Things gave it back to the whole world, the idea of playing D&D, I just went with it when a friend approached me saying that he wanted to try it out, but there was no DM to try it. So, okay, yeah, I jumped into it and I became the eternal DM ever since. And I just love being a DM, so I have no complaints against it. Now, With D&D, we have created all sorts of different stories, like being in Waterdeep and fighting Sanatar, or maybe Manshun even. Those giant like characters from a whole amount of lore and stories to tell from the Forgotten Realms. I have created my own setting in which characters have battled against versions of them, of themselves, even, and colossal creatures, going from a campaign to level 1 to level 17 in the this setting that they created just from my bare imagination. There is so much that can be done from playing D&D and any other TTRPG in the space as well. But as we are celebrating D&D here, I want to stand out that playing in a fantasy world of this sort, you can create stories with a lot of complexity, going into the Feywild to battle dreams of your own, or face even Baba Yaga. That's things that can only be done in this space, and the fact that it's so ingrained in our memories as if we have been those characters or seen those scenes creates the best movies that you can pretty much see, because you are the one starring in it. Well, not even, not you technically, it's like a character that you created, but you understand what I'm trying to say here. Getting Excalibur from the top of a mountain was also an incredible thing that stood out from our campaigns, in which one of the characters had to get the Excalibur from the a rock in the top of a volcano, knowing that if they do so, the volcano will erupt and the giant protecting the volcano was going to smash them. So they had to create like a whole operation to distract the giant, while another character had to get the Excalibur out of the rock, which took multiple turns, having everyone becoming extra anxious. But somehow this character spent one turn and got a critical hit. The next turn got another critical hit. And there was three consecutive turns in which the character got a 20 on their die. How improbable is that? I have no clue, but the fact that it happened and it created such an incredible story is something that not me nor any of the other players is ever going to forget. So, D&D, thank you for 50 amazing years, even though I didn't play them all, but to continue growing and creating a game that every time just tries to get better at it, and I hope that for the next years you continue growing as much as you have and create this space for us to create just amazing stories. And I really hope that more people in the world start to get closer to the TTRPG medium, as there is so much stuff that you can get out of it. So again, thank you, Dungeons and Dragons.
This is Chris Nizak. I am the editor of the Gnomecast. I also write on the Stew sometimes, and I'm the creator of Mr. Rectomark Productions. D&D created this role-playing game hobby, and it made a space for the two things that I love doing pretty much more than anything, which is performing and storytelling. But that is not the most important thing that D&D has given me. It's the friendships. 12 or 13 years ago, I forget sometimes, I started this whole Misdirected Mark thing, started with one podcast called Misdirected Mark. A few episodes in, and I was determined to make sure that I was a weekly releaser, and I was for like 6 or 7 years until I got married. That's the first time I took a week off, was for my wedding. But early on, I went and looked for this guy named Phil Vecchione. He was a writer for the Gnome Stew. He'd written a book called Never Unprepared, and I wanted to interview him. I believe he was actually my first interview on Misdirected Mark. I tracked him down through Martin Ralia, the person that used to run the Gnome Stew. Met him at Buffalo State College. Had a conversation with him. He agreed to come interview on the show. I met him in a neutral location at UB. I mean, I was sick the day that I met him, too. And this was, you know, pre-pandemic, so it wasn't as big of a deal. And we were outside, so it was fine. But I was very, very determined to get a hold of him and try to keep this podcasting thing going. He was pretty impressed with my prep on the interview. I read the whole book, had some very interesting questions. I was very impressed with his knowledge base, and we had a really good time during the interview. We struck up a friendship after that, becoming pretty good friends. I would have him guest on the podcast, and my former host, Mark Napick, eventually had a kid and he had to quit. So after about 100 episodes, Phil was my first choice to be the new host for Misdirected Mark, and he came on. And from that point on, doing this thing about role-playing games and Dungeons & Dragons weekly for a decade has given me some of the closest friendships. And Phil is just the first of them. There's Bob, Jerry, Senda, Ange, Jared, all these folks. There's been so many over the years that have been a part of my life because of this hobby. And yeah, podcasting is the impetus for it, but Sean Merwin on Down with D&D, who's now over on Mastering Dungeons with Chaos Abadia, great show, you should go listen to it. But as much as I love performing and storytelling, it's that, these friendships that I've made over the years, this hobby, and this hobby of podcasting, the intersection of those two have given me over time. And I've gotten to talk to a ton of great people over the years. Monty Cook, Ken Height, Aloy LaSanta, Shauna Germain, Bruce Cordell. I mean, there's a lot of Monty Cook people in there, but I mean, it's more than that. But those connections that I've been able to make, and then the deeper friendships that I've made with the people I mentioned before, part of Misdirected Mark, and the people who I've just become friends with from listening to us and playing games with, that to me is what Dungeons & Dragons is all about. The other stuff is great, and it really helps, but that right there.
Hello, Gnomecast listeners. This is your review gnome, Jared, here to give you my story of how D&D helped to put me on the path that I'm on now. D&D and I are about the same age, so I can't claim to have been there when it all started. I had to learn to read first. My story with D&D and why it's important to me is intertwined with the story of how much my sisters mean. Both my sisters are older than I am, and both of them helped to shape who I am now. My sister Vicky would read me short stories about King Arthur and his knights before bedtime. Vicky was also a huge fan of Tolkien, and the copies of The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings that I read were hers. She was also the one that came home from the movie theater one night to tell the family that the Star Wars movie that she just watched was amazing and we all needed to go see it. My sister Rhonda was very enamored of the Chronicles of Narnia. Rhonda was the one that convinced Vicky and I to watch the animated Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe special, as well as the Rankin and Bass Hobbit and Return of the King. Rhonda also took me to see Clash of the Titans when it first came out in theaters. Sister Rhonda was so enamored of fantasy that when she started to see this new game, Dungeons & Dragons, getting mentioned, she really wanted a copy of it. My parents bought her a copy of the 1981 basic set for her birthday. While Rhonda never lost her love of fantasy, and we've spent many nights talking about more recent fantasy stories like A Song in Ice and Fire together, she did enter a phase in high school where she wasn't interacting with a lot of friends that wanted to sit around a table and pretend to be rooting around a cave looking for treasure. Despite my low dexterity, I took my first level of rogue, crept into her desk drawer, and stole her basic set. Few years after she first received it, almost literally set my brain on fire. It connected so many things that I already loved. By this time, on top of the Arthurian stories that Vicky read to me, I also had been drawn to Robin Hood and started reading the Marvel Conan comic books. I was now dreaming of having King Arthur, Conan, Perseus, and Robin Hood all traveling together to kill dragons and fight skeletal monsters. It took a while before I understood the game, beyond just imagining that monsters like Sturges would pop out and try and drink your blood if you didn't hit them with a fireball first. I tried to run a few games before realizing I did not understand the rules and how things were meant to work. We watched a friend's older brother running a game of AD&D, and while I learned a lot about how D&D was supposed to work, I also learned that I did not want to be the type of DM that that older brother was. During this time, the D&D cartoon came out, and the Satanic Panic hit full force. The Gygax interview showed up on 60 Minutes in 1985, and I lost a friend that I had had since first grade because his mother didn't want me to corrupt him with my satanic D&D talk. After all that time studying, imagining, and observing, I finally got a group of friends together to make characters when I was about 12 years old. They made an elf, a wizard, and a thief, and I made them survive on a desert island with a vampire chasing their first level characters until the sun came up. I would never suggest that someone attempt that scenario, and yet for the first time it felt like the game worked the way I hoped it would. We all told a story together. D&D was something that I was suddenly passionate about. I was going to a Lutheran school when I was in 7th grade, and we had a Sunday school lesson about the evils of D&D. I challenged our teachers on their assumptions, they read through some of my basic and expert sets, and let me run a session in front of the class, which was just a short encounter with a party of characters fighting a giant crocodile. But they determined that maybe this D&D isn't so bad as long as you're careful with it. While I've had times in my life that I've been too busy to have an active game, I've only tried to leave D&D behind once. That was when my old friends went off to college and I got married. Years later, when I was dealing with the aftermath of my divorce, I realized how I had lost some of myself by trying to be the image of what I thought a responsible adult should be. My sister Vicky, for all of her love of Lord of the Rings, did not live long enough to see the Peter Jackson movies on screen. Complications from Hodgkin's disease took her away from us too soon. Because of her, there was no way that I was going to miss seeing these movies on the big screen. So many things fell into place when I watched Fellowship of the Ring in 2001. I knew that the stories that my sister shared with me were always going to be a part of me. I knew that I wanted to have a way of touching those stories and shaping them and sharing them with others. I hadn't seen a D&D book in several years, but the shiny, less than a year old D&D 3rd edition looked like a good way to get back into things. Found some new people to game with. I started running games for them and for my kids. I found part of myself that I didn't know that I was missing, and I know that part of me is something that I don't want to lose ever again. For me, D&D is not one specific game. It's about telling stories and changing them and sharing them with your friends. Learning about other people and sharing things about yourself. It's looking for what we have in common, respecting what's different, and using that to build a narrative that we all enjoy.
Hey folks, Ange here. I've talked often about my history with RPGs on various podcasts and the blog, but I think it's worth taking a look back at D&D, especially considering they're hitting their 50th anniversary this year. Let's give the game its due. When I was first invited to play D&D in 1986, I was hooked instantly. I was already a kid who spent most of my time lost in imagination, devouring science fiction and fantasy, along with comic books, so getting to sit down at a table with other people and play pretend was astounding. But as hooked as I was, there were also problems in those early days. There were the gatekeepers. I wasn't allowed to play an elf because I would do it wrong. And then there was the capricious nature of the game run to be GM versus players. Instead of the modern concept of playing to see what happens, it was very much play to trick the players into doing something stupid. And we're not even going to get into the misogyny of the hobby back then, because that wasn't just a D&D thing. A few years later, when I was in college, my regular GM had to move away, forcing me to either give up playing or find a new group. I ended up finding a new group of folks to play with and was exposed to different players in different games. This led me to have a conflicted relationship with D&D. While it was still ever present in gaming spaces and in my thoughts, my choices for games were directed towards things like Champions or World of Darkness and that modern supernatural angst. I completely understand now that it wasn't just the game of D&D that made those early days a problem. I'm not a fan of the way 1st or 2nd edition AD&D worked for quite a variety of reasons, but that wasn't the real problem. It was the culture around the games that I was in that pushed me into a corner, making me feel like I couldn't play a new or interesting story with my characters. The way the groups I gamed with back then played made me feel like I could only play certain types of characters, and if I wanted to do something else, it was wrong. Ultimately, the college group I found ended up fading away from gaming too. Those folks have mostly become lifelong friends I count as family on every level, but for a variety of reasons, we stopped gaming together. That's a whole other story we don't really need to get into, but suffice it to say, my gaming dried up in the mid-90s. Along come the early 2000s, and through a series of serendipitous events, I got a chance to play 3rd edition D&D with some out-of-town friends. This was not the game I had grown to be frustrated with. Suddenly, the barriers that were always between what I wanted to play and what I felt was allowed to play were gone. Of course, I made an elf ranger because screw that guy from 1986. That one experience awoke in me an appetite to game again. So, you know, game again more than just playing online in mushes or muds or playing games like EverQuest or various video games. I wanted the tabletop experience again. So began a quest to find new people to play with. Mind you, at this time, I still firmly held the belief that I could never run a game, a leftover bit from the 80s and 90s groups I played with. Again, luck and serendipity had my back. I found a group, and even though the GM was really bad at running the game, and a horrible human being to boot, the other players were a treasure, and we pretty quickly broke off to form our own group that has been going strong ever since then. We actually did a Gnomecast about this last fall if you want to hear more details about that. These were the folks that even pushed me into learning how to GM, which, you know, is a series of fortunate events that led me to podcasting, which is why you're hearing me now. 2023 has been a momentous year for D&D, both good and bad. The corporate side of the business of D&D made some serious missteps that has irrevocably changed the landscape of gaming. D&D's not going anywhere, but things definitely took some different turns in the early parts of 2023 that weren't expected. But beyond those negative things, we also got the delightful D&D movie Honor Among Thieves and the blockbuster video game Baldur's Gate 3. It is kind of an exciting time to be a D&D player. We all have our opinions on the various iterations and editions of the game that have come into the world since that fateful release in 1974. It's okay to have your favorites and ones you don't have an interest in playing again, but we need to be mindful that our goal here is to have fun, roll some dice, and tell amazing stories together. It's okay if someone likes to play the game differently than you do. There's plenty of game for all of us. I am particularly grateful for what 5th edition has given to me. My group started with 5e around the time it came out, and we are still going strong with it today. I can easily rattle off a bunch of beloved characters that wouldn't exist without that particular version of D&D. Dove, the sorcerer trying to stop a demonic invasion. Zalus, the dragonborn cleric of Kord who helped stop Tiamat. Selena Marivaldi, the former mercenary fighter trying to keep her impulsive companions alive in the dungeons of the Mad Mage. Kizina, the tiefling rogue working for a dragon and trying to find her missing twin. Them and so many more. Beyond that, this addition has helped improve my skills as a GM. I was having issues staying focused with other games, but when I forced myself to run a more traditional D&D style campaign, it helped me learn where to focus. And 5th edition has made that even better for me. I am quite proud of my Depths of Zendrick campaign, and I'm really hoping we can get back to it sometime this year, once Dove and her friends finally deal with that demonic invasion once and for all. I'm not sure where RPGs would be today without D&D. It's had a long and complicated history with both good and bad for the hobby. We could have endless debates about that, and actual books have been written about it. But I can just say, during this time of the game's 50th anniversary, I am grateful it opened the door for me and continues to let me spin some amazing tales with very good friends.